Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you are searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or just need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There is nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. We all have the SeatGeek app on our phones, and it is by far the easiest way we have found to shop for tickets. We can be anywhere with just a few taps, instantly find seats. In fact, few of us actually just used SeatGeek to buy tickets to a game 2 weeks ago. We had a great time. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase, so just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. They didn't have Oreo topping. I wanted Oreo topping. That's what I wanted. In fact, I wanted it more than I wanted the ice cream. I thought about getting just a cup of the Oreo topping. Now, is that weird?
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Hi there, and welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Monday morning, July 23rd, 2018. I hear there might be rain in the forecast, but we don't care. As long as they play baseball, we get to do our show. I am Eric, and with me today is ESPN fantasy writer AJ Mass, the Points League expert. Hello, AJ. How are you today?
Suffering a little bit from nose, tongue, and spleen disease.
Your team is a piece of work, let me tell you. Your Mets team, that is unbelievable. And every day it keeps getting worse and worse. We will discuss the Mets on today's show. The mess, the Mets, whatever. Plus, we've got editorial watchdog Leo Howe. He's always smiling. And producer Anthony Claudio. Don't worry, we'll keep the show tight today. I'll sum up the busy weekend. We've got to talk Matt Carpenter again. And oh, those Mets. And I'll be reading some hash browns later. Here's the buzz. I feel like we should start with happier things. So let's start with Matt Carpenter, because every day is another home run. He probably homered while I was talking. And he's not the only one. We're seeing some interesting, there's an interesting theme brewing over the past week, month, whatever you say, of players that maybe we had given up on, and Carpenter was certainly one of them, just playing out of his mind. Carpenter has 18 home runs in the last month. Corey Dickerson had a huge weekend, basically matching his season total for homers. Rougned Odor is now stealing a base a day. Isn't it strange? We're seeing like these players that nobody wanted a month ago, and now they're just doing great again?
It is. This season is the 3-2 outcome season, and so, you know, you got these streaks of players just getting bunches of strikeouts, and then we go, they're useless, and then they go on these tears where they just hit nothing but home runs, or, you know, if they finally make the base path, they're just running like crazy, and they, you know, Odor probably won't steal another base for 3 weeks. It's just ridiculous how you can't predict what's going on in the league this year.
Right, and what I would recommend to people is, obviously, Carpenter's now up to 94% rostered, and he should be. He's at 25 home runs. And
he didn't homer yesterday. Cut him.
Yeah, just let him go. But like Corey Dickerson had a huge weekend, even had a combo meal. We'll get to that later. Rougned Odor, you know, he's never going to win a batting title, but he's up to 259. If I told you that Rougned Odor was going to 259 and go 15 homers, 15 steals, you take it. And he might end up doing that. And it's also good to see some players that were slumping turn things around. Tommy Pham, over a 30-day period, I don't know the exact numbers, but he was just brutally awful. And he might have gotten cut in some leagues. Then he had a huge weekend at Wrigley Field with some multiple hit games, stole a base, knocked in runs. Ryan Healy, who I'm like on the fence about playing in one of my leagues. And I had him, of course, on the bench on Sunday in a daily, and he homered twice, knocked in six. It's hard to tell with some of these players, like, when they're just going to get hot. What do you tell people? Do, like, play the hot streaks and then move on when Carpenter goes in the tank again, or what?
No, I think, well, in a case like Carpenter, I mean, he was hitting the ball very well, getting very unlucky. I've been saying that he was going to bounce back for a couple of weeks now. I didn't think he'd do this, obviously. But, you know, I think you have to have patience with guys who are hitting the ball hard and whose history of, you know, BABIP versus batting average seems to indicate that they should be doing better in terms of what their batting average is. That's what I look for in terms of these streaks. You know, I raised FAM in my rankings last week. You do the rankings thing. Understand that, you know, that's the one that some people jumped out at me and said, why? He stinks. He's stunk the last month. Why did you raise him? Because, you know, it's going forward. It's not looking back. And, you know, if you're picking on one guy, then obviously I got the other 299 perfectly right. Thank you very much. You know, it's just that, you know, that feeling you get with, like, a player who's underachieving, it doesn't always mean that they can't rebound. And some of them are going to. It's just, you know, the law of averages.
Now, you spent a lot of time on points leagues where walks and strikeouts matter, whereas in traditional fantasy leagues, they don't. We care about batting average, homers, RBI, steals. Points leagues are added up differently. Carpenter's always been a big walker. Rougned Odor and Corey Dickerson are not. I mean, Dickerson is walking less than once per week this season, and his K rate is cut in half. So how do you value, when you're looking at slumping players, do you look at the walks? Does it matter that much to you, or are you just, like, basically on track record, like you said with Carpenter?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, like, obviously one of the key stats you look for in terms of hitters is the walk-to-strikeout ratio. And, you know, if you're looking at people who are not rostered in 50% of the leagues, there's five guys out there right now who I'm going to write an article on, you know, you really need to be paying attention, and they happen to be fairly hot of late. Ben Zobrist, Jesse Winker, Jason Hayward, Denard Span, Max Kepler. These are five guys who just the walk-to-strikeout ratio is really darn good in the top 20 in the league, and they're under-owned because of that. They're going to have more value in points leagues. So, you know, I'm not scared away by a guy like Kepler who's betting, like, you know, 220 for the season. There's bound to be some sort of improvement in points leagues because of that ratio. And, you know, if you're sort of dealing with a roto league, obviously then the batting average matters, and you got to look at it differently.
Been a big fan of Jesse Winker's for a few seasons now. He plays fantasy football, did you know?
I did not know. I did know he was hitting .458 this month, which is darn impressive.
Yeah, the reason I was interested is because he was a walker. He knew what pitches to swing at in the minor leagues. You could tell. And I thought there was enough power for, like, 20 home runs. And I still think there is right away. But, yeah, what's my Winker? Oh, so it was at the Futures game a couple years ago, and Winker grabbed me. I was interviewing somebody else. Maybe it was Josh Bell. And Winker grabbed me and said, the Buffalo Bills are going to win the Super Bowl this year. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think so. And I knew who it was, and then we started talking fantasy football, and then we forgot that it was a baseball game. Anyway, I like Winker a lot. He's from Buffalo. Let's get to some other stuff here. All right, let's get to your team, because that's a mess. And there actually is fantasy-relevant news here. The Mets traded Yuri's Familia to Oakland over the weekend for pretty much nothing. And Familia got the win on Sunday, but he's clearly not the closer. Blake Tronin's having a fantastic season. One would presume Robert Gsellman will be the saver of Mets games, what few they have. But the big story to me, other than the dysfunction, is Yoenis Cespedes. I think it's 50-50. He doesn't even play another game this season. And his long-term outlook for dynasty purposes, I think, is clouded here because of the heel problems. Our colleague Stefania Bell wrote an excellent story at ESPN about this. What's your take here? And I'm kind of being serious now with Cespedes. I mean, obviously, we could go on for hours about the mess that is this team, this franchise. But with Cespedes, like, I'm just not sure he's going to play.
No, and this has always been, since he's been with the Mets anyway, this has kind of been the thing. You know, he shows up for a little bit, and then he's on the DL, or he's not on the DL, which is even worse, is that, you know, he gets banged up, he's that day-to-day, and, you know, look, the front office communication with the dugout clearly is not there. It hasn't been there. I mean, when I was Mr. Met running around the field, I knew more about the team than Bobby Valentine did, simply because I was listening back of house when they weren't talking to him. I would just hear Horowitz and some of the guys talking. But it's just the communication lines are not there. If Callaway didn't even know that Cespedes was hurt, there's issues here.
So if you've got Cespedes in an ESPN standard league,
get out.
Can't you just make a case today to just drop him outright? I mean, even in a 10-teamer? I mean, we have him as a top 100 player, or close to it, I guess. But, like, in my new rankings, he won't be anywhere near there. I just doubt he plays much at all the rest of the season. So move on.
Yeah, I mean, you still have to rank him, I think, just on the off chance that he tries. But, you know, is there any reason to believe that he'll perform long term? No. I don't think so. He's an issue. You know, some people, you know, we just say Manny being Manny, this is Yo being Yo. It's just, you expect this sort of thing. I mean, certainly if I had Familia, in terms of the closing situation, he's not closing out there. In fact, he proved even with the win yesterday that's who he is. He's going to put men on base. And yeah, he might be lucky and get a double play to pitch out of it, but he's never going to 1-2-3 you. And it's struggling. I think Gesellman will be much better for you fantasy wise, than Familia was with the Mets.
By the way, for those that are, you know, rewinding and checking out what AJ just said, he actually was Mr. Met, and he wrote a book about it. So Google AJ Mass and check out his book. He wrote it a long time ago. It was pretty good. Steven Strasburg came back for Washington on Friday night. That did not go well. He threw a lot of pitches over 4 2/3 innings, a lot of hits, a lot of earned runs. Now, it was against a top team. Atlanta's a potential playoff team. I'm starting to actually believe now that Washington's not going to make a run here. And it's because, I mean, Harper had a nice weekend, but Strasburg, that was scary. If you have Strasburg on your team, are you the least bit worried? What will it take? 3 more bad starts?
Well, I'm always worried about Strasburg. Let's face it, his history has not exactly been the most stellar of health. And, you know, when he comes off the DL again and struggles, I have to be worried. I mean, I think they'll be able to give him an extra day of rest this week, which might be a good thing. In terms of, you know, maybe too many pitches on his first start back, but I'm concerned. I'm definitely concerned, and we know that there's a history in that dugout of pitchers screaming at each other and players getting on each other's cases. It never bodes well for team harmony, and I know that team harmony doesn't mean you can't win, but I'd be a little concerned.
Yeah, I mean, that was strange. I mean, Max Scherzer seems like a real nice guy, and then he and Strasburg get into it in the dugout. Well, nobody tried to choke anybody else. Love that guy.
Washington, who shall not be named.
We will not name him on this show, and anyone who does has to stand in the corner for a minute. All right, Washington's closer is in some peril, so let's get to the closer carousel.
The closer carousel.
So I've got Sean Doolittle in several leagues, including the very shallow NL labor format, 12 teams NL only, which I did get Manny Machado. I spent 90 of my $100 to get Machado, secure him. I'm still not going to win. That thing's been over since the first week of the season. But Sean Doolittle, I just kind of assumed when he went on the DL that it was because, it's a week before the All-Star break. Maybe he's tired. He's got an actual toe injury that could keep him out the rest of July and some of August. This is a big deal now. Kelvin Herrera becomes a decent pickup.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's not like the Nationals can't win games. They certainly can. And, Bryce Harper's post-All-Star home run derby curse doesn't kick in. I'm sure they'll be fine scoring runs. I think everyone thought he'd come back skills break, like you said. And when he didn't, that was a sign that this is something a little more serious. I certainly would be worried if I had Doolittle on my team and was counting on him to come back.
Stress reaction in a toe on his left foot. He's going to be sidelined for at least a few more weeks. He's having a really nice season. It's a shame. Herrera went more than 3 outs to get the save on Sunday. He's clearly the guy over Ryan Matson, even though last week he wasn't. But, like, that's how things are with closers. What else happened in the world of the saves? Let's see here. Kyle Bearclaw. Man, that's a bad one. It happened in Tampa Bay. It's a walk-off grand slam. Bearclaw, for the first 3 months of the season, was fantastic. 4 earned runs. Sunday, 5 earned runs. Are you worried about him? Now, Miami could trade him. They probably should. I mean, any bad team should trade away their closer for whatever they can get. You don't need a closer to save games when you're going to lose 100. But your thoughts on Miami?
Oh, Miami doesn't trade people away. Come on. They keep their guys at home for years and years and years. No, he's so out of there. Which is why I don't think Mattingly had a problem like just hanging him out to dry with 40 pitches on the day after he had just pitched another game. I just think he's trying to squeeze the lemon for as much juice as he can before they let him go, which is probably stupid, because a bad outing like this is certainly one that's going to decrease the return, perhaps. At least someone can make an argument for it. Well, he's going to run the last 2 games. You know, maybe we won't throw in that extra prospect you wanted. But I don't see him with the team in 2 weeks.
And by the way, the trade deadline's a week from Tuesday, the last day of July, and we presume that Zach Britton, I mean, Baltimore's smart enough to at least trade him, and Zach Britton could be elsewhere. I'm not sure he's going to close. There aren't too many contending teams that need a closer right now, but we'll keep an eye on Zach Britton's situation. There are available closers out there in a lot of ESPN leagues. Detroit's getting their guy back, Shane Green. Houston's Hector Rondon's still out there. Willie Peralta gets all of Kansas City's saves now. He's readily available. Bearclaw's still out there. DeSelman is out there in a ton of leagues. Kirby Yates of San Diego after the Brad Hand trade. Will Smith, I mean, you can't help but find a closer available if you want it, even if it's short term like Toronto, where Clippard and I assume Tapera will get saves for the next couple of weeks before they get Asuna back. But Kelvin Herrera is out there, and I've got to be like 90% of leagues. I mean, this is an amazing time for closers, it seems, in fantasy, AJ, because there's so many available. At least a third of the closers are available in at least 50% of leagues.
Yeah, well, you have the case of a lot of the closers being traded, which opened up the job for new people. So that's the thing that you have. And you also have situations where I think there's like a new influx of managers, and, you know, the clock is ticking. I mean, once you get guys like Matheny, like getting sent packing, I think you realize that you don't have a lot of time to you know, establish yourself. And so even your go-to guy doesn't necessarily stay your go-to guy. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Aroldis Chapman suddenly finds himself on the DL in a couple of days if he has another bad outing. It's not that he'll lose the job outright, but, you know, there's other options there. So why force it if he's struggling? You can use that 10-day DL, that move from 15 to 10 certainly is going to make it a lot easier to take these guys and just give them a little vacation.
Right. First game of that series with the Mets, Chapman could not throw strikes, right? I mean, it was three walks.
Oh, it was
ugly. He clearly needed to get taken out of that game.
Chapman gets booed coming off the field. That's crazy.
Yeah, why would you do that? All right, who loves and love combos? Here are the combo meals.
Hey, it's a combo meal!
All right, on Friday, we had Derek Dietrich, who's really underrated, actually, even in points, especially in points leagues, I would argue. Ronald Acuna, leading off for Atlanta, had his first of the season. Corey Dickerson on Saturday, not exactly a speed demon, but having a nice couple weeks here. Sunday, Bryce Harper and Mike Trout joined together, and Rougned Odor, who's running wild. Trout has six combo meals, twice as many as any other player. Harper is one of the six players tied for second with three. Do you think that Harper will ever be a big stolen base guy? I view his situation odd because the final 10 weeks of the season, he's in a contract year. He's going to end up somewhere else, but it almost doesn't matter how he performs to me. He's going to make his $300 million or whatever it is no matter what he does because he's a proven power hitter. He still has upside. But, like, for fantasy purposes, you ever think he'll steal 20 bases again?
I don't. I mean, even when he stole 20 bases, he was caught double digits. So I just don't think it's something that's a focus of his. When you see Mike Trout, and, you know, when he puts his mind to do something, he does it. When Harper doesn't seem to be the type of player who's going to put his mind to do something like that and improve his skills in the offseason, it just strikes me as he's that type of guy. Not saying he's not talented, but I think he's more apt to coast on the talent. That's kind of how I gauge his personality. So unless he said, this season I'm going to steal 20 bases, I just don't think he will. And when he does that, I think another part of his game might falter as a result. So I don't necessarily think that we're going to want him to do that.
You have one roster spot, active utility, Corey Dickerson or Rougned Odor?
Oh, I think I'd probably go with Dickerson. I've been burned by Odor so many times in the past. It's close. It's definitely close. It's not an invalid comparison. I think it might come down to what position that you wanted to put him at. Like, if you needed an upgrade potentially at middle infield, I might go with Odor instead. It's close, but I would go with Dickerson.
All right, let's take a look at Monday's schedule here. Mostly a full slate. There is a game on ESPN. It'll be Patrick Corbin of the Diamondbacks against Luke Farrell of the Chicago Cubs. You don't need to roster Luke Farrell. ESPN Plus will have, look at this one, Francisco Liriano and Heath Philmeyer. Look, bad teams matter too. Tigers, Royals, they matter too. A lot of fantasy goodness. Well, maybe not a lot, but some fantasy goodness is there. Royals now, maybe they'll trade Mike Moustakas. I don't think he's probably better than Mike Alfranco, but not by a lot. Who am I interested in today? Lucas Giolito interests me. I'm wondering the interest level you have. Now, he's walking everybody. I'm not saying you want him active in any fantasy leagues, but in a dynasty format, like, at some point, Giolito could figure this out and just stop walking people. We know he can strike hitters out. The White Sox will get better in a year or two like the Phillies and the Braves have. What's your interest level in Giolito, if any?
Not too much today. I mean, if I was going to go outside the box and pick somebody, I actually might go with a guy like Philmeyer just because, you know, it's that unknown quantity kind of just, or, you know, like maybe Mejia to with the Twins, who's coming up from the minors to pitch a game. Like, especially that game is interesting just because the Blue Jays, Estrada's not coming back, so they're going to the bullpen game in that one. Gausman against the Red Sox. I'm not starting him, but I'm definitely watching this game because I think this is the type of pitcher who, if he does well tonight, will be traded any day. So I think this is like, if he, his value will skyrocket and will never be higher if he pitches well tonight. So that's why I would definitely be watching that game. But after watching the Red Sox all weekend, there's no way I'm touching him against that lineup.
I read a story over the weekend that said Kevin Gausman was interesting for the Rockies. He's from Colorado, apparently. And I thought to myself, if he ended up on Colorado's pitching staff, like, we all just assume he would get pounded. Like, that's when he would emerge as a star, if he ended up there,
from
his career path, right? I mean, he's so hard to predict. There actually is a nice story also. St. Louis right-hander Daniel Ponce de Leon, this is his first start, I think. I might be wrong about that. I think I've seen him in the major. I don't know if I have seen him in the major. He's pitching at Cincinnati, and they gave up a ton of home runs over the weekend. Ponce de Leon got hit in the head by a line drive when he was a minor leaguer, might have been last season, and he still has a dent there. And he's like, I don't want people to view me as that guy. I just want to be a major league pitcher. So I'm rooting for him. I'm not saying I'm going to pick him up today. But Daniel Ponce de Leon, remember the name. Maybe there's something there. St. Louis does develop their starting pitching. Some of it's been disappointing this year. Like Flaherty and Luke Weaver, Reyes can't stay healthy. But I don't know. I'm interested to see what he does. How about that? Tuesday on ESPN Plus. Oh, it's the Cardinals and Reds, Austin Gomber and Homer Bailey. Again, not a whole lot of fantasy relevance for the starting pitchers there. But you know what to do. Drew Pomeranz of Boston at Baltimore. That should be interesting because Baltimore doesn't do much of hitting, except for Jonathan Scope. Pomeranz, supposedly healthy now, used to be a good pitcher. Your interest level in Pomeranz, top 50 starter, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I like Pomeranz. He's one of those guys that, you know, he never quite seems to get over that hump and really elevate himself to top 30 status there. But certainly at the back end of a rotation, I like him. Matchup is certainly very strong for him in this game. So while I'm not like long term, like, oh, my gosh, I have to have him, I think certainly this is a start that you're going to use him.
I'm not sure if I want to use Kyle Hendricks. I have a weekly league, and Kyle Hendricks is one of those guys I drafted and said, I'm just going to leave him active all season long unless it's, you know, at Denver or something crazy. And he's just not having such a great season. You know, I'm just not pleased with him. He's home against Arizona, against Clay Buchholz, of all people. What do you do when you've got a starting pitcher? Okay, and we view this from different sides, points leagues and traditional are a little bit different here. But what do you do when you have a starting pitcher you thought, I'm just going to leave him active all year long, and then you get to mid to late July and you're like, well, maybe I shouldn't be doing that. Do you ever think that way?
Well, yeah, you have to see how your team is doing. You know, if you're playing a points league, you're obviously, well, most people are playing in a head-to-head weekly format. So when in the week he pitches also has a factor into this. I'm much more willing to take a chance, a guy like that who's kind of a number three starter in a points league early in the week, especially if the matchup is decent, as opposed to on a Sunday where it's like, you know what, I can't really use negative points here, then I'll bench him. It's a little bit different in terms of timing of the start. But early week, Tuesday, yeah, if he's pitching again on Sunday, then I have to really think hard.
Yeah, the two-start guys, they change everything. Like, I activated Jaime Barria in a league where I never thought I'd activate him, but he's got two starts this week. Presumably he gets called up for the start today. And I activated him over, I can't remember who it was, but like, it might even be Hendricks. I might have to consider that because it's two starts and I want the volume. So Wednesday on ESPN, David Price, Dylan Bundy, it's the Red Sox and the Orioles. ESPN Plus has Edwin Jackson and Martin Perez. Wow, this is a grand week for starting pitching matchups. Edwin Jackson has pitched well. I'll give him that, but that's all I'll give him. I won't give him a spot on my fantasy team. And what would it take for you to roster Edwin Jackson? Like, serious answer here. Like, if he has an ERA of 3.10 in the first week of September, then will you roster him? Like, what would it take?
considering I have Edwin Jackson, I'm looking at my list here, at my number 166 pitcher going forward. I think that answers all you need to know.
I have a 12-team AL only with 11 starting pitchers in the required lineup, and he starts for me. So I guess that's the what would it take answer.
11 starting pitchers are required?
11 pitchers.
11 pitchers.
Sorry, yeah, you start 11 pitchers.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, all right. because I was thinking, man, that's an interesting league.
Yeah, that would be really deep.
Obviously, in an AL only, everybody gets rostered. It's like an NL only. I've got Ryan Flaherty in NL labor, and it doesn't look silly. I mean, you have to roster anybody who ever plays. But, yeah, in a mixed league, I still can't make a case. All right, we have lots to discuss later on with the hash browns, so we wait for those. All right, we got questions to your, or we got answers to your questions, hopefully. And reminder, every Monday, Thursday are our shows. You can tweet them in. You don't have to wait to be prodded to do it either. You can just tweet in. It's hashtag 06010MLB. And, you know, what we see, we will try to get to. First up today is Gabriel. Is Garrett Hampson somebody to look at? He's got 33 for 38 on stolen bases in the minor league. Steals are so tough to come by these days. How many PAs do you expect, and do I consider rolling the dice on them and drop either Eduardo Escobar or Strubel Cabrera? So Garrett Hampson, for those who are not aware, and many of you probably are not, is the second baseman for the Rockies, who got called up over the weekend. And again, he was doing some nice things in the minor leagues. DJ LeMahieu was on the disabled list yet again. I don't know how many that is, 3, 4. And it's a little oblique, so we would assume it's a couple weeks. And then, again, maybe he could just get hurt again. But again, Hampson is a guy who was putting up some numbers in the minors at AA and AAA, hitting for average, taking his walks, stealing lots of bases. And, you know, a handful of players are going to steal 40 bases this year. So I'm interested. But my problem with rostering him, AJ, is I don't know if he's back in the minors in 10 days. So I don't think I would drop Escobar or Cabrera to get Hampson. Would you?
Well, again, you know, the wrinkle in is that I don't know where Cabrera is going to be in 10 days.
But he'll be playing. He'll certainly be somebody's something. He'll be playing regularly.
Somebody's something, sure. But, you know, do you put Cabrera, who might be, you know, one of those bats off the bench, versus a guy who, assuming he's there for, let's say, 2 weeks minimum, I mean, I don't know how long LeMahieu's not going to be there, but you don't call a guy like that up if you're not going to play him. Well, you know, so does he give you, you know, 8 stolen bases in 2 weeks? That's much more valuable than whatever Cabrera is going to give you if he's suddenly a vol player.
I think it depends on how much you need steals.
If you really need steals,
I'd be willing to drop Cabrera first before Escobar.
And the other thing is, like, you know, we know when you're talking about Rockies players, there's a history of getting really excited over guys when they come up, and then suddenly there's that disappointing streak that seems to follow immediately after.
Well, they're at home all week. I think they're at home all this week, which makes it a little bit more interesting. Hampson is available to add. He's not going to bat at the top of the lineup, I don't think. Who knows? Who knows with the Rockies? You're right. I feel like I've been disappointed so much by Rockies hitters.
Trevor Story, David Dahl. Like, there's always something.
There's always something. Who was that second baseman? He was a young second baseman. He wasn't even all that young. He was like 26. And I was really excited about him. It was a long time ago. He ended up on the Mets. And he didn't do anything there either. He was a walker. And I thought, oh, man, if he can hit for a little bit of power at Coors Field. I can't remember the name. I got to look it up. You know who I'm talking about?
I can see his face. I can't come up
right
with
right. I mean, like, I can see it was a weird name too. Well, weird, you know, like we have normal names. I mean, it was like it was a name you don't see every day, like a phone.
I totally know what you're talking about, Dale.
All right, you talk. I'm gonna look up every Rocky season for the last it was like a decade ago too, right? It wasn't like recently. Oh, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't they have like opening day lineups? All right, now this is gonna bother me. All right, all right, let's move on. Maybe someone, Leo, you know what I'm talking about, right? Like, it was like it's like a four-letter last name or something like that. Not four-letter last name. A four. All right, moving on. Max. Max has to drop one of these players. I'm going to look this up while you're talking. Right? You know what I'm talking about.
Yes. No, I remember he came over.
Oh, wait.
We were excited.
Let me see. Like, I'm going to look.
Is it Jason Nix?
No.
Okay.
That's three letters. Yeah. It was something, but it was...
It's close enough. 3 and 4. They're very close.
This was like a... Remember, like, it was a right-handed hitter. Oh, man. Everybody...
We can edit this out, right?
This is gold. This is radio gold.
Max wants to know, I got to drop one. Freddy Peralta, and he gives me all the details that we already know. 22, took him 93 pitches to get through 3 2/3 last time we saw him. Nick Kingham of Pittsburgh, who has 3 straight quality starts. Joey Lucchese, who has 5 earned over his last 18 and a third. Is that right? or Joe Musgrove, who three starts a season with five-plus earned runs, but I think he's pitched better of late. So it's Peralta, Kingham, Lucchese, Musgrove. Why don't we just rank them from guys we would want to have to guys we don't want to have? What do you say? And you can talk for a long time. I'm looking this up.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Just look fast. I really like Lucchese a lot. Not necessarily to start every day, but I would probably rank him first of that bunch in terms of going forward for the rest of this season. Slightly ahead of Peralta. I mean, it's close. It's definitely close, but I think Peralta just has issues finding the strike zone and issues working from the stretch. I've been saying that. So that is my problem, is that once he gets a guy on base, he has issues. But, yeah, I mean, matchup game with Peralta, sure. I like Lucchese more than that. After that, probably would lean Musgrove after that. There's a lot to like about Musgrove. Certainly the lineup behind him, and the Pirates are hot, so he's going to get the run support, which helps in the win department. I know that you don't really base fantasy on wins, but I would put him third on that list. And then rounding out Kingham, I know there's quality starts, but of those four, I'd probably put him last. I don't have a lot of confidence in him in terms of going forward this season. It's just an opinion based on a small sample size. When, you know, the younger pitchers, it's really hard to tell. Peralta's the most upside, so in a dynasty league, I would probably take him as tops, because I think he'll be able to work out the issues of pitching from the stretch.
How did you pronounce that? I think you pronounce that a little different than I do.
No. It's dynasty.
Is it? Is that what it is? Let me check the dictionary. I still can't find this guy.
There's some really good names in Rocky's history, though, I gotta say.
I looked every year and I can't find them.
Going back, like, I mean, Ryan Spielborgs is a great name. Chu Freeman is a great name. Like, there's some good names. Obviously, Tulowitzki. There's good names.
Chu Freeman. Nice.
I don't know where.
Brad Hopp was always one of my favorite names.
Did this guy ever play?
Wasn't that Hagrid's brother in Harry Potter?
By the way, I disagree with what you said. I was listening. I think Freddie Peralta could be special. I would take him
first.
Yes,
I do. I just think he needs to work on with runners on base. That's where I see him getting a little bit wild. He's young. He's going to work it out just for this year. I don't think it's going to happen.
I would probably drop Kingham first, just like you said. Or Lucchese. I don't know. All right. Brian writes, your thoughts on Jesus Aguilar for 2019. Tristan Mazamet, number 100 in his dynasty ranks. I believe that's how he pronounces it. But that covers more than just next season. Players ranked by Tristan in that tier for dynasty include Mitch Haniger, Matt Carpenter, and Mike Moustakas. I feel like what we're seeing out of Aguilar is kind of legit. Like, I'm going to project 30 home runs for the next couple of years out of him. Not too old. They don't have anyone else at first. He looks legitimate to me. Your thoughts here on Aguilar, like, do you target him in a dynasty, but, like, he seems legit, right?
He does seem legit. I mean, you know, we said the same thing about a lot of players in the past, you know, who suddenly had the power surge, and just in general, watching how the league's style has led towards these guys who are just going to, like, come out of nowhere and hit home runs. I'm a little bit wary in terms of putting too much value on the home run, because there are just so many home runs in the league. So it depends on who I'm cutting for him. Because I'm, you know, when you have so many homers, it depresses the overall value of them, you know, relatively speaking. So there is a bit of an issue there, but I don't think this is like some sort of fluke. I think he's definitely got the skill set for as long as people are going to be hitting these home runs, which seems to be the new normal.
Next up, this is from Eric, not me. Who is one player that you were wrong on early in the season and have now come around to for the rest of 2018? Maybe a player who you didn't think was worth your time, but now he is. It's not the best example of this, but like, I kind of gave up on Jonathan Scope a month ago. Not in a league in a 10-team league, I gave up on Jonathan Scope. I thought, there's just no way he's going to bat close to 290 and hit for a ton of power, especially when they deal Machado. And over the past couple of weeks, he's obviously made me look silly in that department. So I guess Scope might be the one. I mean, there's certainly players that I thought were going to be better than this. Like Scott Kingery jumps to mind. I can't believe. He just looks overmatched. So in the eighth inning yesterday, the second game of the doubleheader, Phillies were playing San Diego. And the Padres bring in Phil Hughes, who's just awful now. And he's got nothing. and he loads the bases with no outs, and Kingery comes up, and I'm thinking, if Kingery can't hit this guy, he probably belongs in the minor leagues. Like, just bring up J.P. Crawford when he's healthy to play short. You'll get better defense and a walk. And Crawford will walk. Kingery just shouldn't be in the majors. And three 90-mile-per-hour fastballs blew Kingery away. And my result was like, yeah, I was wrong. Like, I still think he's going to be a terrific player. My parents don't. But I think Kingery's going to be a really good player. Like, maybe Dustin Pedroia. But he's not that now. And right. He just looks way overmatched. So I was wrong. I thought Kingery would be not a 30-30 guy. But I thought, like, 12 homers, 25 steals. He's just not on base enough to run. So I think Scope and Kingery would be my guys. Who are your guys?
Yeah, you know, the thing with, because you and I are involved in ranking players constantly, I tend to forget my rankings as soon as I put them up, just because I'm always looking for the next set of rankings. So I can't necessarily remember what I thought about these guys, because I think part of that's part of what hurts a lot of fantasy players, is that they hold on to those preseason, early season perceptions of these players, and they're not willing to shed them when things change over the course of the season. I think that's detrimental, you know, especially in terms of, like, well, I drafted this guy in the first round, I can't trade him, versus, I drafted the guy in the ninth round, he's a steal, I can't trade him. It forget all that. Just I don't think about it. I just look at what it is now, and that's what I'm basing my future moves on anyway.
That sounds like a cop-out, and we have your Sleepers, Breakouts, and Busts that we published in February.
So fine, I had Matt Duffy. I think that's not too bad.
Real quick, yeah.
I think he's done a lot better than
I don't know
people.
If I want to know.
Yours look all right, AJ. You had Tommy Pham as a sleeper who, you know.
How is he asleep?
Been up and down. It was the early sleeper. We did the thing where it was like top 100 guys. Because yours was Yoan Moncada, Eric. So that's not exactly.
Well, I mean, I thought the question was more like, Tommy Pham had an amazing year last year. He was a top 10 outfielder. I thought it was somebody outside the top 100 who would get into it.
Right. Well, and and we all did differently. So then there are mid-round sleepers. AJ had Kiermaier. Eric had Manny Margot, obviously.
Oh, my goodness. Why am I even hosting this show?
And then Eric had Mitch Haniger, and AJ had Matt Duffy as a late sleeper.
That worked.
I guess the one that AJ would probably be least proud of was saying Luis Castillo might be a breakout player. I don't think he's broken out. But Andrew Benintendi is a breakout player there, Eric. That turned out pretty well.
He's a monster.
And then busts. I think you guys did all right with the busts. Well, especially Eric. You got Bryce Harper and Miguel Sano. I think those are pretty good bust picks. Mm-hmm. And then Chris Bryant and Gary Sanchez for AJ. I wouldn't say that they're huge busts, but...
There he is!
There you go.
I found the player.
Oh, no.
Okay.
I gave up on looking on the Rockies. It wasn't a four-letter last name. It was a five-letter last name. It turns out he never actually played for the Rockies. Brad Emus.
Yeah.
Or Emmaus. You remember him, yeah. Right?
I do. What year was that?
2011 Mets. Why did I think...
Okay, so that was after the era of Enix Sneed.
Why did I think he was... Yeah, he was a Rocky, and they never played him. That's why I kept searching. He was never there.
I think, was he a Rule 5 or a Rule 5?
Might have been a Rule 5.
I think he was a Rule 5. That's what I... Yeah.
Added 162 for the Mets.
Yeah.
Took walks. All right, why are we wasting time with Brad Emus?
Yeah, let's talk about Enix Sneed, man. He was...
Manny Margot is one of the ones I just totally got wrong. You're right. I Manny Margot to me last year looked like he was emerging into a 15-homer, 30-steal guy. And, you know, the fact is that Manny Margot can still do this. Scott Kingery can still be a fantastic player. Like, I wouldn't drop these guys in a dynasty format, but I can't make any case to roster them right now. Margot got hurt over the weekend. They say he didn't break his wrist. It looked like he did. I was wrong about Margot.
Kyle's not in the studio today, but I guess we need to mention that he was wrong about Tyler Chatwood.
You know what? He convinced me, and that's why I'm angry at him. He actually did. A guy leaving Coors with strikeout potential, going to a team that should manage him correctly. I mean, Chatwood just doesn't know where the ball's going. Even in his last outing, he won it, and he walked six. I watched it. It was Friday afternoon, I think. And he's walking everybody. He doesn't know where it's going. He's going to kill someone if he throws the ball at their head. I don't want that to happen. But, man, if the Cubs had, like, a healthy Alzolay, you know, the prospect, I wonder if Chatwood would still be in the rotation. It's a lot of walks. All right. Any more? We have one more here. Gordon, got any buy-high guys? My fantasy trade deadline is looming. There are some players who may be viewed as overachievers to most that you believe can lead me to glory. We should probably tell people when The trade deadline is for ESPN Standard Leagues, Leo. And I just don't know. It's usually in early August, right? Well, you can look it up while
look it up,
I'm talking. Because I don't want to get people wrong. And we want to make sure it's this year's trade deadline. But AJ, buy high guy. So I assume that means like somebody who's doing well in the player radar, but you think they can do even better. That's how I would view that question. And
sure.
You got anybody?
I think a lot of people are down on Cody Bellinger. I think that they're not getting the numbers that they want out of him, even though he's doing pretty well. And I think he's certainly a guy who I would buy high on going forward. If people are still not buying in on Ozzie Albies and Whit Merrifield, I think they're both really, really solid and can do even better than they're doing now.
I kind of view buy high as this player is playing well and most people would view him as an obvious sell, like maybe Trevor Bauer, and I don't. That's kind of how I would view buy high. Like, okay, this guy's performing really well. Like Trevor Story is number 18 on the season player rater. And he's achieving this with a .293 batting average, which nobody thinks he can still do. But he's also got 68 runs batted in and 13 steals, which he can still do. So to me, I think Trevor Story fits that description. I think he can probably, I don't think he'll hit .293 the final 2 months, maybe like .260, because that's what he is. But he's also a guy who could hit 30 homers, knocking 110 and steal 20 if he wanted to. That's pretty, really,
sure.
Really
sure.
Good.
So. And similarly, I think a lot of people are not buying Blake Snell and how well he's pitched. And while I do think there may be some regression coming forward, I still think he, if you value him as a top 25 pitcher, maybe not a top 10 pitcher, that his stats and his All-Star status have kind of elevated him to, oh my gosh, he must be on the All-Star team. But I don't think he's going to regress to the point where you're going to regret having him on your roster by any stretch of the imagination.
Friday, August 10th.
Friday, August 10th, I will write that down, is the trade deadline in ESPN Standard Leagues. How about that? All right. And that's confirmed, right?
You can find that in the ESPN Fantasy Support Portal, which you can find at ESPN.com/fantasy/baseball.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I learn something new every day on this show. AJ, thank you so much. This has been fun. Let's do it again on Thursday. Any national days here? Really? You know what? I'm going to stop mentioning these. We should just stop putting these in the note. Tuesday is apparently National Cousins Day. Is that Kirk Cousins? Did we all bow down to the Vikings quarterback and make him a third-round pick? Wednesday, National Wine and Cheese Day. A lot of whining on this show. And National Hot Fudge Sunday Day. So they're both Wednesday. Do we mix wine and cheese with the Hot Fudge Sunday?
That sounds awful. And Kyle did mention that today is actually National Vanilla Ice Cream Day.
Okay.
So... I mean, celebrate in style.
Say. Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think every day should be National Vanilla Ice Cream Day.
I prefer it. It is
the kind of ice cream I eat.
Yeah,
no, right. What about you? You as well, AJ? What's your favorite ice cream?
I definitely like the vanilla ice cream more than the chocolate ice cream. Although I would probably get it into like a gelati mixed in with the water ice.
You know, I got angry a week or two ago. We were at some ice cream shop with my kids. And somebody was getting ice cream, and they didn't have Oreo topping. I wanted Oreo topping. That's what I wanted. In fact, I wanted it more than I wanted the ice cream. I thought about getting just a cup of the Oreo topping. Now, is that weird? Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been weirder if you wanted Hydrox topping, certainly.
So here's an interesting little thing, and I won't dwell too long on this, but this is something interesting that I found. I went to Five Guys for a milkshake, and they give you the option of the Oreo cream and the Oreo cookie as different elements in your shake. So if you just want the cream with a chocolate shake, or if you just want the cookie, then you can do that. I thought that was
Yeah, but they also offer the bacon, and I'm not sure I want that.
Oh, the bacon and caramel in sweet stuff is, yeah, that's, you need to try that. It's real good. Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to our little show. And by the way, next week, is it next Monday, I believe, the Fantasy Focus.
Is Guy Fieri going to be here?
What's that?
Guy Fieri, he's going to be here, right? Talk more about these diners, dashes, and dives.
Do they talk food on the Fantasy Focus Football podcast?
I would assume they do.
A little, right?
They have to.
I mean, I listen to every show.
Yeah.
Like sometimes, you miss something. Anyway, they go daily starting next Monday, I believe. So if you're a fantasy football fan, and really, who isn't? Listen to that. All right, that's all for today. AJ and I will be back on Thursday. Thanks so much, and please have an awesome couple of days.
Everything is awesome.
Mild twilight.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at espnradio.com.